Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Time. My name's Taylor Payne and football is actually back. Newcastle take on Gateshead at the International Stadium, their first outing of this new pre-season. George and Chris have been dispatched to talk about the match, the new names in the squad and how they looked, but also to discuss Eddie Howe's responses as he faces the media for the first time this season.
Yes, thank you, Taylor. Welcome to a Pod on the Tyne from the Gateshead International Stadium, where Newcastle have indeed drawn 1-1 with Gateshead, crowd of more than 7,000 people. Chris, we're back. Football's back. We're so back. How do you feel?
I'm pleased that the football's over, to be honest with you. I mean, you in the first half, I was worried that you weren't going to make it through to the end of the game. It didn't seem to be a particularly life-affirming event for you.
Well, I was looking at the clock a lot and it just seemed not to be moving.
You struggle with friendlies, don't you?
I don't like friendlies. I mean, I don't like football, let's be honest. No, I don't like friendlies very much. I kind of always get a bit excited. And it is great that we're back underway and, you know, pleased that they're... Not that the talking stops, because then we wouldn't have a podcast. But, you know, that the football starts back up again, yeah. But... Nah, they're just not. They're not kind of wonderful events, really.
Do you want me to briefly run through the events of the game?
Absolutely not. No, I'm going to not allow you to do that. I'm going to remind our dear listeners that we have a pod mashup, the second one of our Newcastle United podcast all-star events coming up at Gosford Civic Theatre on August the 27th. This one benefiting the Alan Shearer Foundation and with the great man himself in attendance to us. Tickets are flying for this. Please get on to the Gosford Civic Theatre website if you want to come along, but you need to be quick. I am not going to allow us to spend too long on the Gateshead performance result. I can give you 30 seconds if you want.
Well, I'm just going to lay out the facts. So,
oh, God, here we go.
Well, Newcastle started with an 11... I think we need to explain who was in that side. So Nick Pope was in goal. Lewis Shahar was with the young fullback at right back, because Newcastle don't really have that many options there. Fabian Cher, Alex Murphy and Lewis Hoare in defence. Sean Sturm made his debut as the number six. We'll come on to him and that a bit later. Jacob Ramsey and Joe Willock in midfield. Joe Willock, who Newcastle have held talks with Besiktas about potentially going there. That hasn't developed yet. Jacob Murphy on the right. On the left, you had Harvey Barnes and then Sean Neave up front, because Willa Sula was absent due to a minor injury, which again we'll come on to. Newcastle dominated possession, territory, chances, couldn't take any of them. And then in the 34th minute, with Gateshead's second shot, and by that I mean the first one was a free kick, Luke Supik finished beyond Nick Pope. Could Pope have done better? Possibly. Could Newcastle's defence have reacted better? Yes. But then Newcastle sort of lacked a cutting edge, really, for most of the game. After the hour mark, changes started to take place. Players came on and off. Eventually, Newcastle equalised in the 79th minute when Lewis Hall's cross was diverted into his own net by Ben Williams. Newcastle were the better side in just about every element, except they couldn't actually put the ball into the back of the net.
Okay, that wasn't quite 30 seconds, but fair enough. I've given you that.
A lot of the players who came on were under 21s as well.
Yeah, by the end, Eddie Howe was not even standing up by the touchline anymore. I think he.
Yeah, Robbie Stockdale, under 21 head coach, was here, as were the under 21 staff, and I think they're also going to be going down to Bristol with them, because it'll be slightly later in the game. But I think there's going to be a similar number of changes in that one.
Anyway, it's not about results and performances at this point of the summer, but there are huge topics, big topics to get into, and indeed some reaction from Eddie Howe that we need to hear from him and then unpick some of those things. It's the first time he's spoken this summer, so we have to start with a big one. That is Bruno Guimarães. He wasn't here, of course, because he is still on his extended break from the World Cup, but he is the subject of firm interest from Arsenal, not that they have made an official bid. And Bruno has let it be known that he would like the opportunity to join them. So, first off, let's hear what Eddie had to say, and we'll run a few of his answers together here.
Yeah, I've spoken to him, as I would do. Bruno normally, you know, he's just a fantastic person. Had some really good conversations, both sort of before the World Cup, during the World Cup, and after the World Cup. So, what we speak about obviously has to remain private, but just a great player, a great person, and look, I don't know what's going to happen with Bruno's future. That's for other people to, one, speculate about, but also conversations that I'm not part of. I don't think it's fair to compare situations and what happened previously. I think you've got to look at it in its own right. Bruno, captain of our football club, he's been an unbelievable player and person all through the time that we've worked together. I speak on behalf of everyone at the football club. We absolutely love him. And of course everyone would want him to stay. Yeah, I think the plan off the top of my head, I think it's the 31st, I think he's due back. So he gets an extended break because he went further in the competition, and he's enjoying a holiday at the moment with his family.
So just on how that worked, so how, when he spoke for about 4.5 minutes to the media after the game, and by the media I mean it was broadcast, radio and written media all together in a huddle, it was far from ideal. So if you think there were a lot of questions to remain unanswered, if you think it wasn't pushed enough, I get that, but it was ended rather abruptly. We were told it wasn't going to be very long beforehand, and so that's how that all came about. It was sort of questions jumping in and out on it. On Bruno's situation, clearly, I mean, Howe even says that he is not the one who's directly involved in it. I mean, Newcastle themselves would argue we're not directly involved in discussions, active discussions about potentially selling him, because there has been no bid and they want to keep him, as Howe said. But it is that saga which keeps dragging on. There's a lot of noise surrounding the situation. Newcastle have not been able to sort of really quieten that noise. They haven't come out and publicly said that he's definitively not going anywhere. Howe didn't say that himself. So it means that really it just the story just keeps rumbling on, really, doesn't it? He's due to return. We now know the exact date he's meant to return is the end of July, July 31st. He's meant to be in La Manga. So for this week, it's just really going to rumble on as to will Arsenal actually ever make a bid?
Yeah, I mean, you know, of course, what happens is you have these conversations and then you come away and, you know, you kind of chat about it. It's like, well, was that positive? Was it negative? Was it sort of neutral? There's, you know, but there's nothing in the way of fact in it. I mean, the only fact that Eddie Howe talked about was that it was to say that Bruno's due back on the 31st and he expects him to train with the rest of the squad, but again, that's not definitive. He talked about the good relationship he's got with him and the good conversations he's had with him, thereby sort of hinting that perhaps it won't be a similar situation to Isak, who refused to train and play for Newcastle. But as you say, we don't know. And until Arsenal make a bid, or until Bruno says something or does something, there's very little that Newcastle can do at the moment. But the message behind the scenes remains the same. They desperately want him to stay. They don't think that Arsenal would be able to afford or would want to afford the price that Newcastle would, you know, reluctantly accept if they reached that kind of valuation, because that value, you know, he is far more important to Newcastle as a player than he is to Arsenal. That's something that you've said before, Chris.
Newcastle talk about that Arsenal would have to get to quote unquote irrational level.
Yeah.
And they don't see that. I mean, that would probably be the best part of 100 million, if not 100 million above. And he's obviously turned 29 later this year. There are other midfielders out there, and if you look at it, and if Arsenal are going to pay that sort of level, and I don't know Arsenal's thinking, but despite Bruno being an excellent, excellent player, in the current market, the way that clubs work, you would have thought you might invest that in a player who's younger than a player of Bruno Guimarães' age. So yes, for now, it seems it's going to rumble on. Howe hasn't been able to squash it. He hasn't been able to, but he also has made it clear that Bruno, he spoke about his love for him and how much he means to this team, and we'll just have to wait and see what happens in La Manga. It'll be interesting. I imagine if he does land in Spain on Friday or the back end of this week that Newcastle will be making a big thing on that social media. And if he doesn't, then I imagine that we will not see, then they will not be as active on social media about that situation. And then maybe we are on the East Exit territory. Nobody seems to expect that from Newcastle's perspective, but you just can't rule it out for now. Unfortunately, you cannot rule it out. I hope he doesn't act like that. But yeah, I just think this saga is going to drag on for at least another week yet.
So our main midweek pod last week was all about Kevin Keegan for understandable reasons. Obviously very sad, but hope you enjoyed that pod, if that's the right word. Come on to talk a little bit more about those tributes in a little while. So we do need to make mention of Alhaji Bamba, who has signed from Monaco in a deal worth up to 40 million euros. We know there's still a lot of work to do on transfers, but here is Eddie Howe talking about Bamba, and then also a slightly different clip about Newcastle's transfer business so far, and indeed the model they have adopted in the window so far.
Yeah, I think we don't want to lose our best players. That's, I think, an obvious statement to make. So losing those big two is painful for us. And difficult. So for me, it's been another challenging summer so far. But we're always trying to do our best for the football club, short and long term, and try and get the squad in its best shape. Yeah, I'm very supportive of what the club want to do. Yeah, there's been a shift in terms of the profile and the age. I think that's quite obvious. I've always believed in young players and tried to develop young players. So that fits in line with my philosophy anyway.
Anything else close on the transfer front? Obviously, you brought in Bamba. If you could say a little bit about him and what he brings, but also anything else close?
Nothing that I know of, Chris. I think, yeah, Bamba will bring unique qualities. He's a lovely size. He's good technically. But I think with all the signings that we've made this summer, he's going to need a little bit of time and patience. And I think we all need to be very supportive to the players that have come in. I don't think we can put too much pressure on them. I think it's part of my job to try and take the pressure off them and just allow them to develop and to enjoy their time here.
Sorry, just before we get on to what Howe said there, every time you go to say Bamba or somebody does it, I do just think someone's...
I pause because I want to say La Bamba, yeah, La Bamba.
So Newcastle have made four signings this summer so far, which volume-wise, there's only three or four Premier League clubs who've actually done as much business as that. So people may cry on social media and say Newcastle aren't doing enough. And it's like, well, actually, they have signed four players. You can question who they have signed and the model that they have gone down. But then beyond that, they've also tried to sign Munoz and Manzambi. They've been very active. They've sold two players for a lot of money. Again, you can question the sale of those players. But they've brought in that money, and that's the direction they've decided to go down. So all four are aged 20 or under. Bamba is 20. He's only made 25 senior appearances so far in his career for Monaco, albeit a few of those were in the Champions League and the rest of them in Ligue 1. Sean Stowe played here, and we'll come on to him in a minute. He, similar number for Ajax. He's only 18. So again, you don't look at Bamba and think he's definitely going to start that first Premier League game of the season. He's probably going to take a bit of time to build into the team and the squad. They see very high potential again. He's a deep-lying midfielder. He's good on the ball. He's very, very good at breaking up play. So he's sort of the Sandro Tonali successor, but that's not to place that burden on him that you would expect him to start the season in that position, because, as I say, he probably isn't ready for that. And if Lewis Miley is fully fit, looks like he'll be back, hopefully in and around the squad by La Manga, he will take that role. But again, another signing they kept under wraps, someone they brought in and very clearly fits that model, as Howe said. He's always keen to develop young players. He's never necessarily been against that, but he also urged patience with these players and what Newcastle need to do with them.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of fascinating. It's something that we've mentioned on the last couple of pods, that, you know, that there is an idea here, that there is something new and something different, not just the players themselves, but kind of what they represent. And yeah, okay, so there's been a bit of angst this summer, and there still is, of course, around Bruno and who Newcastle might still need to bring in and the business that needs to be done. But there is something new happening at the club, which is exciting, or should be exciting, could be exciting. It does mean that everybody has to kind of get behind these players. Perhaps we have to temper our expectations a little bit about what they can do in their first season. But yeah, that was the first time anybody at the club has kind of spelled that out in public about this new model and what it looks like. So on that subject, we should talk about Sean Sturt. He was the only one of Newcastle's four new signings to start against Gateshead, playing in that number six role, the kind of Tonali role. The club have cautioned that he needs time to settle in, that he needs time to develop physically. I think you could see that on the pitch in terms of his size and stature. But again, you know, we have to take the opponents into account, the circumstances into account. But that was a really nice debut for him, wasn't it?
Yeah, he looks very comfortable on the ball, very confident. I spoke to him afterwards briefly with a few members of the media. 18-year-old, excellent English is the cliche you would expect maybe from a Dutchman, but he looked very, very eloquent.
Better than Steve McLaren's Dutch.
Just a bit, yeah. But also, I mean, I'd spoken to people in Newcastle and they'd said that what you'll find with Stur is that he's also a very confident teenager, that he speaks as if he's beyond his years, and you see that on the pitch as well. He demands the ball, he wants to move it, he wants to be progressive, wants to get the ball higher up the pitch, play between the lines. He was dropping into the sort of full-back positions as well when there was space there, looking for the ball at all moments and demanding it, and then getting angry at himself if he made a mistake or didn't get forward. So yeah, it was encouraging, albeit, as you say, I have to take opposition into account. Just to mention why the neither Bamba no, Basmana Touré featured here is that Bamba has flown back to France. He will join up the squad, may be involved at Bristol City. Same with Basmana Touré. He was given a bit of time off again because he'd been involved in the World Cup. So that's why those two weren't in the squad here, along with there was no players who featured at the World Cup here. Langa had flown back briefly to Newcastle and then went on holiday again. He should be back this week. Same with the likes of Voldemort and Malik Chow. So it remains a squad without any of the World Cup players involved.
Yeah, I thought Stur looked really, really good. Yeah, as you say, confident on the ball, already directing people, pointing to where they should go and what they should do, kind of shades of Elliot Anderson in the way that he does that kind of thing as well. And as you say, yeah, not just a defensive number six, but actually trying to get the ball forward. Get the ball forward at all times and not afraid to try and make sort of line-breaking passes. You know, of course, there's always an element of risk with that kind of pass. But, really encouraging.
Yeah, well, whereas Bamba's coming in largely, I think, as a number six, Stewart can play deeper or can play in the sort of number eight position, almost in a sort of Bruno way. And this is not to suggest that Bruno Guimaraes is going to leave, but I think longer term, if you were to look at a quote-unquote Bruno successor, I think maybe they see it with Stur, but obviously he's not ready for that now and there is no desire for Bruno to go this summer.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the States in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
There were also 20-odd minutes for Ewan Jowan, the young goalkeeper that Newcastle have signed this summer. It's still an area where Newcastle need to strengthen. Nick Pope began in goal. At this point, it would still feel like a bit of a backward step if he was starting the season, I think, for Newcastle. And it's now emerged, of course, that James Trafford, their long-standing target, may be joining Leeds. There's firm interest from Leeds. It feels that Newcastle haven't been back in there in recent weeks. Can you give us an update on that and where things stand?
Well, just on the Trafford situation, there seems to be a narrative to emerge at some quarters from certain people in Newcastle that they were never back in for James Trafford. I would push back strongly against that. That yes, for the last week or so, I think they have moved on and have been looking at alternatives, and they have never been overtly confident that he would sign, but he was the number one or the primary transfer goalkeeper target, has been for the last 2 years for part of this summer. So there was an interest register there, not just in talks with Man City as to whether Sandro Tonali will. They did want him, but for whatever reason, that is not going to progress. He's chosen to go to Leeds. Newcastle are looking at alternatives. I can't specifically name them. They've been offered Zion Suzuki, the Japan goalkeeper from Parma. I've mentioned that before. Also interesting. other goalkeepers, Carl Rushworth at Brighton, but I don't think that one will progress. So it's probably going to be, you would imagine, again, a player from who's brought in from the continent. But it clearly is a position that still needs strength. I mean, Jowen came on, had literally nothing to do. He kicked the ball a couple of times in terms of little passes, but he didn't have a save to make. And Pope basically didn't have a save to make. And I think there was some criticism of him for Gateshead's goal. Maybe he could have reacted quicker, but so could the defence have reacted quicker. He had so little to do, it's sort of difficult to draw too much into that. But going into this summer, signing a number one was one of the primary issues Newcastle needed to resolve before they'd sold any players, and obviously they've sold them and then subsequently need to sign other positions. It remains it. And if Newcastle go into that Liverpool game and Nick Pope is in goal, I do think it will be slightly deflating for some in that stadium, because I do think that at least a part of the fan base appear to have, if not lost faith in Pope, have serious questions about his decision making. And so that remains an area that Newcastle need to address. And for all of the signings they've made so far, for all four and the positives you can take from the direction and what they could be in the future, none of them necessarily walk into the starting 11. None of them may start that first game, and that's what I think needs to be over the next fortnight or so. There needs to be some progress in that regard, because it just feels like at the minute that first 11, I mean, today with no Willisula, who was absent, bit of a groin problem, Howe said, hopefully back for Lamanga as well, Newcastle just lacked a cutting edge. Neve looks dangerous up front. It's not to dig him out too much, but they didn't have any of their three senior strikers, because neither Wissa nor Voldemort have returned yet. But the top and bottom of the pitch, the two ends that we said that let them down last year, there's been no change there.
Yes, I was going to mention Asula, Joe Linton and Sven Botman, none of whom played, but Howe expressed great confidence that all will be back very soon, that this was just precautionary on those.
Yeah, Botman seems to have been a bit of a knock. He did play, him and Asula had played against Dalton the previous weekend.
Knock in the face, I think he said.
Yeah, knock in the face, yeah. Asula had scored against Dalton, scored from the penalty spot, so that's what was strange. Joe Linton didn't feature in either game. Now, part of that, I think, is that they are being very, almost treating him with kick gloves to a certain degree, bringing him into this season because he had injuries last year. There'd be a lot of conspiracy theories out there, but is this linked to Bruno Guimaraes? Newcastle deny that's the case. We'll have to wait and see in time. But yeah, again, he didn't have his physicality and his leadership, I suppose, to a certain degree in terms of seniority on the pitch. Fabian Scher's first appearance in about 6 months after all the injuries and problems he's had. He did not play against Dalton. He'd been ill last week, but he lasted about an hour.
I see you've sneakily got match action back in.
I did. I'm just trying my best. It's just you know, it's just a smattering here and there.
Unbelievable. We do have to mention, of course, Kevin Keegan again. There was a minute silence before the match, and there was a banner held aloft on the pitch. Newcastle are going to be doing something throughout pre-season leading up to that Liverpool game, first Premier League game of the season, first home game of the season against his former club, already going to be a fixture with a lot of meaning hanging on it, but doubly so now. Big plans in place.
Before you come on to what you're going to say, I just want to say that it was impeccably
it was
observed.
Yeah.
The minute silence. Absolutely impeccable.
It was silent. It was like your pin drop around the stadium. And I, on my way to Gateshead, I stopped at St James's. I've been sort of saving it up is not quite the right word, but sort of wanting to feel sort of ready to go there. And yeah, I did. And just blown away by the scenes. I kind of parked the top end of St James's and walked down Barrack Road and came in that way. And there was just a stream of people coming from that direction, but also walking up Gallagate to what has become a shrine now around the two statues of Sir Bobby Robson and Alan Shearer at the corner of Gallagate and the Millburn Stand. Just, it's a sea of flowers now. It's a sea of black and white shirts and scarves. And, you know, a thick kind of cordon of people standing there in reflection, very silent. Not quite somber. I don't think that's quite kind of the right word, because it's sort of celebratory, and you've got these kind of banners saying Messiah. You've got King Kev spelled out in floral tributes and things like that. It's kind of really, really beautiful, and a big queue of people queuing up to sign the book of condolences there is there. It's really special. If you've not had time to get there yet, I would urge you to do it. The plan at the moment is that things will start to get moved on Tuesday. There's concern about the weather. It's due to rain over the next kind of couple of days. So, you know, things could look a bit bedraggled, but it's just stunning. And yeah, it was very emotional being there. I took a scarf down and wrapped it around one of the railings there, just to, you know, pay my own little tribute. Someone who's very important, you know, in my professional life, and you know, the personal consequences to that in terms of making friends. And so it's just really beautiful. And if you haven't had a chance to get along, please do so. You won't regret it. It's really gorgeous. A couple of other things we need to kind of run through. There was a game for Joe Willock. He's been linked heavily to Besiktas. Chris, what's the latest with him?
So Newcastle have held talks with Besiktas about the potential for Joe Willock to go there. There were reports that his agent was actually in Turkey this week. I don't know the veracity of those, but Newcastle certainly have held discussions. There's been no actual bid, but sort of potential figures that it would take have been discussed. That hasn't seemed to move on in the last few days, but he is the player who, when you look at it at the moment, Newcastle actually have seven senior midfielders, if you're going to count an 18-year-old and a 20-year-old they've signed this summer as senior. They have seven senior midfielders, and Howe likes to run usually with six in his squad. A lot of speculation then was, does that mean that Bamba coming in means Bruno Guimarães will go? No, the idea at the moment is that Joe Willock would go. It might not be that he's like-for-like position-wise, because Bamba plays slightly deeper, but you've got Stier who plays in that role. So he's in the final 12 months of his deal. I think for all parties, it's seen as this is probably the summer for him to move on, and Newcastle sort of actively are looking in that position. I would expect him to go over the course of the next few weeks, but whether that's a Besiktas or elsewhere, we'll have to wait and see.
We also have to talk about UEFA and Newcastle's settlement. That's happened again, something that we didn't talk about in midweek because of Kevin Keegan, our Kevin Keegan pod. Now, my challenge to you, Chris, is it's not a straightforward one. I need you to make this as digestible as possible. I can't do maths. I'm terrible with money. So try and explain what has happened between UEFA and Newcastle in the language of not just layman's language, really thick layman's language.
Well, rather than going into the specific numbers of it, on that, I can point you towards an article which Chris Weatherspoon at The Athletic, who is our football finance writer, and I wrote on the specifics of it.
Didn't understand a word of it.
Well, quite. So, but for the very specifics and the detail, please, I would refer you to that. But to explain exactly what this means is that we knew that Newcastle had entered into a settlement with UEFA, and it's over a three-year period. Essentially, Newcastle have certain parameters that they have to meet, and that means that they are going to have to reduce their wage bill, which they've been doing this summer. It makes this summer's business make a lot more sense, because they've had to reduce their overall wage bill because they need the cost base to go down, partly because they are not in Europe, so that's cost them about 60 million, 40 to 60 million, conservative estimate, just from not being in Europe this season. And so the Anthony Gordon sale got them back to almost being sort of par there, and then Tonali's allowed them to invest. But also moving forward, they have these other targets that they have to meet. And if they meet the targets or exceed these targets, they can come out of the three-year agreement earlier than the 3 years. But if they were to keep exceeding them, there would be further fines. Part of the fact, they got fined two lots of 3 million euros, but also there was a suspended 7 million euro fine beyond that, which could be activated if they don't meet these. And then beyond that, there is also the risk of expulsion from UEFA competition. They are not in UEFA competition for this season. Yet, ironically, that is what is governing a lot of what they can do. But if they don't abide by these rules on a three-year rolling basis, they could be expelled. But also, if they get back in the future, it could be that they'd be prevented from registering players, not in the Premier League, but in European competition. In the Premier League, with the new squad cost rules, SCR is set at 85%. Newcastle are more than comfortable inside that. But UEFA is restrictive. It's at 70% is one of the two rules. There's another rule as well. So essentially what this means is that Newcastle are abiding by this. They went to UEFA and they've managed to get a lower penalty and a lower fine by saying, we will abide by the regulations you give us over the course of the next few years. And that is what is governing what they can do now. There are very complicated parameters that they have to meet. Also trigger clauses either way that can be for a positive or a negative benefit that they can gain. Costs here, they can lose costs there, depending on what happens over the course of the next few years. But essentially, if you look at that agreement, that is why they are doing what they're doing this summer. That is why they're signing young players with sell-on potential. They're selling their biggest players for big profits because they need, to a certain degree, sell to buy for the course of the next few years.
I can't lie, I drifted off for about 3 minutes there, but the start was good and the end was good. It does, as you say, it shines a different light on what they're doing this summer, and I think that's quite important. So there is, you know, there is this new or different emphasis in terms of the team that's being built, but there's also a financial reason why this is happening, and I think that's really important. And if I can put that in a different way, it's to almost say that Newcastle United have been on this incredible ride over the past 4 or 5 years. It's brought us to places that we never thought we'd see as fans, winning a trophy, you know, just in great moments, great players. But they could not keep doing what they were doing. They had to change. So it's not just about choice this summer. It's something they've had to do. Like, they've been spending too much money. It's been boom and bust, and it's the same in terms of signing players and so on. You know, there's been too many windows where they've not signed anybody, they've overstretched themselves, and so this has to be different moving forward. So it becomes very interesting. It's a very interesting summer.
It is, and it also, if we bring it back to the Bruno Guimarães situation, there's a lot of fans who, certainly early on when this was happening, saying, well, just give him a new contract. Bruno Guimarães is already Newcastle's highest earner by a reasonable distance. I'm not to say that Newcastle will not give him a new contract, whether it's on improved terms or not, we'd have to wait and see. But if they did do that, there is a cost benefit to that. They will have to make savings elsewhere because of this agreement they've already got. I've said the wage bill's gone down, but the wage bill's gone down because it's needed to go down. The wage bill's not necessarily gone down so that they can pay Bruno more money. So again, it's all of these decisions they have to make. It's a balancing act now. They can't have their cake and eat it for now. Until revenues grow massively over the course of the next few years, they have to keep balancing this.
I love cake.
So do I.
I think that's us. That's a nice way to end, or a nice bit to end, because it's a new season. It's the first game of pre-season that has been in public, and in some ways it's a new Newcastle too. So who knows what the next 10, 11 months are going to bring us. We're very grateful to have you on the journey. Please keep listening. We'll have more shows for you in midweek, a main show and an extra time show. And we love doing it for you. So thanks for being along for the ride. And we'll chat to you in the week.
Yeah, I just want to briefly say that this Gateshead friendly has not always been an annual fixture, but I would like it to be. I do think it's nice for Newcastle to just come across the Tyne for this game. It's big for Gateshead. Speaking to people around here, I think this may basically pay for their away travel for the rest of this year. They're a National League team. That's the fifth tier of English football. The crowds are not as strong as you necessarily like, and that's partly because of Newcastle and then Sunderland down the road. So, yeah, I do like this fixture, and I hope that this is that they'll be back here next year.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.